This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle producing, and signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. And in studio, a special guest, Eddie Rasponi. He was a candidate for governor, as we know, in 2019, and he ran a close race, losing by a scant margin, 40,212 votes out of more than 1.5 million cast in November 16th of last year. And here we are, 3 months later almost, and Eddie Rasponi is back to running his business. But for a year, he was covering the state, trying to make his case that he was going to be the next governor of Louisiana, and he almost pulled it off. And as I just mentioned to him, when you lose a close one, it's quite often much more difficult than when you lose by a landslide because of all the what-ifs. But if you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757 is your number. And I happened to see Mr. Rasponi pull up in the parking lot. And, yes, he has a Trump bumper sticker on his window. And it was that a Chevrolet Suburban?
That's it.
So the man who grew up on Hollywood Street.
That's correct.
I said Evangeline Street a few times during the campaign, but actually it's 3808 Hollywood Street.
That's correct.
About a block or so from the old Redemptorist High School, right?
Exactly.
Is the house still there?
The high school?
Your house, where you grew up.
Oh, yeah. The house is still there. I actually rode by there during the campaign and took some pictures of it just to see how it was doing. Doesn't look nearly as nice as it did back then, but it's still there.
How was that experience at that time? You were born in 1949, growing up in North Baton Rouge.
It was excellent. I tell you, Jim, it was one of the best places in the world to grow up. You know, Standard Oil came there in 1909, and then who followed that was Kaiser and Allied Chemical and Barden Chemical and Ethel. So we had literally, we had almost 2,000 children in our grade school where I grew up, at St. Jarrett. There was like 50 kids per class, four classes per grade. Anytime you wanted to play ball or do anything, it was there. You walked everywhere. You know, Delmont Village was one of the first villages to come, you know, shopping centers to come there. It was just a wonderful place to grow up. We had the school sisters of Notre Dame teaching us. They were pretty tough, but it was a great place to grow up.
I'm sure a lot of the habits that you have now were developed then. I was told, and you confirm, you do get up at like 4:15 every morning, right?
I do.
What do you do when you get up?
Well, I generally get up between 4 and 4:30, and the first thing I do is get a cup of coffee and sit down and do my readings. I read the Magnificat, which is a Catholic publication. It has the gospel, the readings, meditation, the saying of the day, and then I do my prayers, and that takes me anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes, and then I go exercise for about 30 to 45 minutes each day.
Every day?
Every day.
And you know, you look the part.
Well, I don't know that, but I'm trying to take care of what I have. But the spiritual exercise is very important to me. It really is the most important. And then the exercise, that's the only way you're going to keep your energy level up, is to take care of yourself. So,
well, I think there's no doubt you're a sincere man. And during the campaign, one of the criticisms, you ran a lot of ads that were packaged and largely partisan. If people had known more about you, they might have liked you a lot better.
Well, we had some of those ads. Jim, it's not that simple. You have these 30-second ads that you have to put out there, and they're very expensive, as you know. But we had a couple where they just sit down and I told the story about my life, and that was kind of what we were doing. When you come from nowhere, you have to, you know, you have to do some things. But we had a couple, several ads like that. Our website was very, it had quite a bit of that. We had testimonials. But the population, you have some that are interested, they'll go to your website. You have some that just, they just sit on the sidelines and watch TV, and, you know, they have to pick up on certain ads.
As I stated, you lost a close one. You got right at 49% of the votes. Any thoughts about what could have been and how things might have been different if you had done this or that one way or the other?
You know, I think we ran a good campaign, but it obviously, you know, there's a few things. Being a first-time candidate, that's a challenge for your team. And so it took a while. One of the things I tell people, it really took several months, I say 4 or 5 months, to be self-promoting. Because in the corporate world, you know, growing with our business like this, it's always we. And again, I'll correct you a little bit. I'm not running the company. We have a great team that runs the company. I'm there, obviously.
You're at the head of the organizational
chart. That's it. But
how many employees?
Right now, we're probably in the 3,600 range. We had picked up around 4,000 when last year. But that's what we do. I wouldn't change too much.
You've done very well in life, but you invested, I'm told, somewhere around $14 million of your own money in the campaign, right?
More than I expected, but yes, sure
and,
did.
And when you don't win, there aren't a lot of people standing in line to absolve that debt. You're smiling, but are you smiling through the pain?
Well, I tell you, I don't think about that as much as I think about what I could have did with that to serve God. And I truthfully say that. It's his treasure. I did this to try to turn our state around for the future generations, and particularly in the education side of it. We have over 100,000 children, 130,000 for that matter, in D&F schools, and it just got to the point where I could not get it done with this governor. So I felt like I had to do something. It's not just about the jobs and the environment to create jobs. We're last overall, our state, and we're 49th when it comes to education. And even with our improvements in the last several years, we're still there. So I just got to the point where I took his treasure and said, okay, I'll try to do it in a big way. And it didn't turn out that way.
Governor Edwards right now is taking a beating from people who supported him, the teacher unions, because he does not have a pay raise in his proposed budget. And money is scarce. In Louisiana, you have to have a balanced budget, as we know. We can't have a $1 trillion deficit like we do in Washington. But if you had been elected governor, would you have pushed for a teacher pay raise?
You know, I think I was trying to push for a constitutional convention so we can make some structural changes in our Constitution to move our state forward, and obviously education was a big part of that. I think we have the money. It's just a matter of setting the priorities and making sure that we use the money properly. And as I travel the state, I talk to different superintendents, and the ones that are doing a good job and the ones that are trying to make a difference, they want to pay the teachers based on performance. And they'll break that down in different ways. You know, some teachers are very, very good at working in the low-income schools, can relate to the students, can relate to the parents, get things done. They want to pay them more. The sciences, you know, with shortage of teachers in sciences, we need to use technology more. You know, if you recall, with the broadband, you can bring very good math teachers and science teachers to almost anywhere in the state, you know. So I was going to look at from a standpoint of making the structural changes where we can allow them to do a better job. And I think our teachers obviously need to make a lot more money, but we have to do some things different. For instance, in certain areas of the state, and I've had the superintendents tell me they want to go year-round. They don't want to go just 9.5 months out of the year. They're concerned about the children actually having food to eat. They're concerned about it takes a month or 2 months to get the student back up to par again after being off. So there's a lot of things that need to be changed in education to service the student and put them first.
Is there any chance you'll run again?
I think my wife took care of that. No.
This was it.
This was it.
But it sounds like you want to stay active.
Well, I was active before. You know, I've always tried to give back, and I've always believed in supporting candidates that are doing it for the right reason to move our state forward, whether it's local, state, or federal. So I've always done that. And in the last 12 years, I guess, 13 years, I've been very involved with the K-12, improving K-12, because back in 2006, we realized that we'd never reach our goal of having a quality workforce if we didn't fix K-12. We had a 70% graduation rate, and a third of them required remedial. So you had every job creator, you know, trying to recruit and fight over the 50% that were getting a decent education.
Now, during the campaign, and it was a pivotal issue, as it turned out, the involvement of Lane Grigsby in the race, who I know is a confidant of yours, but was he, as he put it, the kingmaker, or was that overplayed?
That's definitely overplayed. You know, that's Lane. Lane was so busy doing his own thing, You know, he would check in once in a while, see how I was doing personally. I think he was more concerned about me personally as a friend than anything, you know.
When those stories came out, though, did you call him and say, look, Lane, you're hurting me more than you're helping me?
I wouldn't say that. You know, the press is the press, and
Well, you, again, you're smiling, but you know that made an impact on the campaign.
Who knows what it did? You know,
well,
I really
40,000 votes, who knows?
Yeah.
Could have been.
I think the 40,000 votes, it came down to the inner cities of Orleans, Baton Rouge,
no doubt.
Monroe, Lafayette. You know, we looked at all the statistics. They realized that they had to get in the inner city and get those folks out to vote.
You won huge in rural areas, and this man, in defeat, received almost 250,000 more votes than David Vitter received in defeat 4 years prior. So I think to say he ran a bad campaign is an overstatement, to say the least. We'll return after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. And our guest for a while longer is Eddie Rasponi, candidate for governor and, of course, a prominent Louisiana business person with 3,600 employees in the construction business, graduate of Louisiana State University, where he enrolled in 1967 after graduating from Redemptorist High School. Went to grade school at St. Jared's, as we noted, just a few steps from his home at 3808 Hollywood, a place that is still standing. And as I've noted before, Eddie Rasponi cleaned John Bell's clock in rural areas, and John Bell's the country boy. And John Bell won in huge margins in the cities, and Eddie Rasponi's the city boy. But sometimes that happens in politics. But you have some things in common before we go to the phones. Your family emigrated here from Sicily in the year of 1912. They didn't come to Baton Rouge. They came to a meet.
That's right. My grandmother had an older brother that was already here, so that's how you did it back then. They had to have a sponsor. So they came into Ellis Island and went down to a meet. That's where my dad was born. My dad was the second one born here. He had three older siblings that were born in Sicily.
That area has always been an area where people from Sicily migrated. Was there any particular reason?
Farming. You know, they came over. I think the strawberry farming was big there, and it also did some cash crops that they would bring to New Orleans, the bell peppers and things of that nature. So,
well, Eddie Rasponi went to LSU, and he, of course, grew up in North Baton Rouge, as did Billy Ab Cannon, who was 12 years older than you. I'm sure you remember when he was tearing the nation apart, at least figuratively, with his football heroics on January 13th, a month ago tomorrow. You were in the Superdome for the championship game. Did I see you in the stands?
You may have.
You weren't in one of those suites? You would have been in the
suite
if you'd won.
No, I wasn't in the suite.
But
no,
you
no.
were in the stands.
I was in the stands.
And I'm sure you were rooting fervently for the Fighting Tigers.
Yeah.
877-217-5757 is your number, and please be cordial to this man. He of course, is not a candidate, and he's a good guy, and his politics may be different from some listeners, but if you like him, that's good, too, but let's not go overboard. This is not the lead-up to Election Day. We're trying to get a reflective point of view from a guy who says he will remain involved in Louisiana life and politics. Let's start with Rebel in Sherwood. Rebel, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. And, I just want to say that I'm glad that Eddie did it all for God, and I want to thank God that he didn't get elected. And I just want to say that I'm praying to God that millionaires and billionaires stop trying to buy our elections and let democracy work like it's supposed to.
All right. Well, I don't know if you're in the same league as Michael Bloomberg, but you did spend a lot of your money, and I don't really have a problem with that. But what about the current landscape where you do have to have gobs of money? You either have to get it from somebody else or spend it yourself, or both. Is that fair to Joe Citizen who might want to run for office?
I don't know about fairness about it, but in my case, I felt like the only way we would have someone to run that would be completely independent and not be beholden to special interests, particularly like the governor is to the plaintiff attorneys. You're going to need someone that has some resources. It's very difficult, especially someone that's not been in politics, doesn't have the name recognition, And, man, I hate to say it this way, but I will. I mean, doing it for the right reasons. This wasn't an ego trip. This was to turn the state around. So you just have to have those resources to do it.
But most conservative candidates raise their money from the business lobby or from businesses, and quite often you dance with who brung you. Are you beholden to people who write a check for you?
You know, I'd like to say not me, but in that case, but I think you have to have the same interests. You know, I think there's been candidates before, like Mike Foster, who put quite a bit of his money in there, but he told his friends, if you give me money, we're still going to do the right thing, you know, if you're going to support me.
Brian in Plaquemine. Brian, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Eddie Risponi. Hello, Brian.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Eddie. My question is about the visit from the vice president for a fundraiser. I wanted to know if the Risponi campaign reimbursed the city and the state for the police costs associated with that visit.
How does that work when president or vice president comes and attends a function? Do the taxpayers take care of it, or does the campaign have some interest in absolving the cost of that happening?
Well, my campaign didn't reimburse. I think the vice president used their resources to do that. But I'm not privileged to that information.
You went to Dearman's, didn't you?
We did. That was the vice president's idea. I was a little bit surprised. He said, let's go to Dearman's. I said, how do you know about Dearman's? They did their research.
877-217-5757. Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, you're on Talk Louisiana with Eddie Risponi. Hello, Mike.
Good morning, Mr. Risponi. I'm not calling to talk politics today, but I'm one of those guys that went to Prescott Junior High and used to come over to the Redemptorist Fair and the concerts that Father Ply had. And being a Baptist boy, it kind of freaked me out when I seen a preacher walking around with a cigar and a beer. But I loved Father Ply.
All right. Mike, based on previous calls, probably didn't vote for you, but he certainly shares a commonality. And in politics, quite often we can't get past our political beliefs and candidates we support. Is it sad what's happening with the division where people who in other circumstances might like one another, but they end up actually hating each other?
I wouldn't go there, but I would just discuss this. You know, I think there's common ground on things that we can agree on. I think we all agree that we want to educate our children. There is somewhat of a disagreement how to do that. There's also we all want infrastructure. We want our infrastructure taken care of. But we have to, when we start setting our priorities, certain people say, well, my priority is a little different. I want my infrastructure, but I also want all of these things. So I think as you know, like we do in business, we set priorities. We only have a certain amount of resources, and we value those priorities. That's what needs to be happening in government. I work with a lot of Democrats when it comes to education. There's quite a few of them that I supported financially because they want their children to have a good education. They believe in those things. So I work across the lines. I don't look at politics from a standpoint of Democrat or Republican.
Have you talked with Governor Edwards since you made your phone call to him on election night?
I don't think so. I don't think so. It hasn't happened.
Were you invited to the inaugural?
Not by the governor.
Would you have come if you had been invited?
Actually, they had a ball game that day that I was more interested in going.
Well,
some
people found a way to do both.
Yeah, but I don't have that privilege to have a police escort to get me up there in time. So I decided to go with the ball game.
Ken in White Oak Landing. Ken, you're on with Eddie Risponi. Good morning to you.
Good morning, sir. Mr. Risponi, you are obviously an intelligent, well-educated man. And part of education, of course, is history. And history has been known to repeat itself many times. In the 2015 election, Mr. Vitter employed a scorched earth policy against his Republican opponents. And I think most political analysis will indicate that that scorched earth policy caused a lot of Republican voters to vote for Mr. Edwards.
All right, I think what, and we've got to go to a break here, but what Ken's getting at, you took it to Ralph Abraham. Any regrets about doing that, or was that something you just had to do to make the case that you were a better, in your mind, a better candidate to run against the governor than he would have been?
Yeah, I think both of us did not want to go out with the scorched earth attitude, and we didn't do that. Anything that we posted was factual. We didn't exaggerate or anything like that. The truth of the matter that is that that had to happen at the very end because their campaign was doing some things. They had a super PAC that was spreading untruths about me, and it just got to a point that we had to do something different.
Have you had any conversations with Congressman Abraham?
Oh, yeah. We've talked. I talked to him that night, talked to him the next day, and, of course, we visited a couple times when the president was here as well. So,
President, he seemed to take a liking to you.
He's a likable guy.
He is?
Yeah, he really is.
Really?
He's very personable.
877-217-5757 is your number. We'll return with Eddie Lee Risponi, the pride of 3808 Hollywood Street. We're back in a few minutes. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We're just going to spend some more time with Eddie Risponi, who's become a well-known personality in Louisiana. He, of course, was well-known in business circles prior to running for governor, but he put his name in the hat, and 734,000, I think it's 734,786, they voted for him for governor of Louisiana. That's a lot of people. That's about 750,000 people voted for this man to be the leader of Louisiana. But in politics, it's like horseshoes. getting close only has so many rewards, and Eddie Risponi is a private citizen running his business with 3,600 employees helping him. But I mentioned his backstory, which I think would have been compelling for those who are unaware and might have even swung a voter here or there. You've been married twice. Your first wife died. You were married to her for 35 years, 21 to 56, and as I'm talking about this, you're not smiling. I can tell that it's still pretty raw 15 years after her death. That had to be perhaps the seminal moment in your life.
Well, Jim, I say I counsel people who went through the same thing. I reach out to them, and the real message to them is that you don't get over, just learn to live with it. And you count your blessings and try to move on, but you really don't ever really get over losing, you know, someone that you've been married to for 35 years, the mother, your children, you know, so.
You think about it a lot, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I'm blessed that my wife, Linda, is widowed, and she totally understands, and I understand what she feels the same way. You know, we obviously love each other and appreciate each other, but we also understand what our first marriages meant to us.
And collectively, you have 24 grandchildren.
Perfect grandchildren.
Perfect grandchildren.
Yes, we are blessed.
Perfect. I think more perfect than the phone call the president made with the leader of Ukraine. But perfect grandchildren. How did you meet? I can tell this is raw 15 years later, but you're still grieving over the loss of your wife. And you meet a lady and you decide to give it a whirl. You're still married, so obviously you're compatible. But and it happened shortly thereafter. How did you meet each other?
Well, we vaguely knew each other. I say vaguely, that's not the correct word, but I knew her husband much better than her. Our children went to school together at St. George and then St. Michael. Back then it was Bishop Sullivan. So I knew her husband. He was in the industry as well at some point. And after my wife passed away, several months later, I actually was doing my prayers in the morning, and this is a true story. I asked God, I said, I'm miserable. I was weeping and smothering, and I said, Lord, you got to help me. And he sent me her name, just like that. So, and from there, I didn't know what to do with that, and he didn't answer me again. And I ran into her son 3 days later at LSU, Arkansas ball game with 90,000 people at halftime. And we talked, and he just said, you know, in passing, he said, you really need to go have lunch with Mom. She's been through this before. And he didn't mean it romantically or anything, because she was already seeing someone for engaged with someone else. Not
really
engaged to be married, but seeing someone else. It wasn't a romantic thing. He just felt like she's been through that. Right. So that's what happened.
You're saying God gave you Her name? How did he do that?
He just answered. He just threw that name in and shocked me because I hadn't even thought about her.
You heard an audible voice?
No, you don't hear an audible voice. It just comes to you. It's just the name Linda Lemoyne came to mind, and I hadn't seen her in 5 years since her husband's funeral. So,
okay. Steve Wenham writes, says, and this is a response to the Republican Party censuring Mitt Romney, does Mr. Rasponi believe party loyalty trumps everything else? Is keeping the party strong the most important issue, regardless of where it's going under our current president? What do you think?
I think the party, what it stands for is important. The conservatism, the moving the state forward, protection of life. Those things are very important, and I think that's what you have to focus on. That's what I focus on.
Do you think Mitt Romney should have been censured by the state party?
I don't get into that, Jim. That's their politics up in Washington. I didn't even follow it. I didn't even read the article.
But Romney, earlier I said you were a good guy, and I mean, obviously you are. Romney's a good guy. Does he really deserve this?
Again, I'm not going to get into those politics up there. I really aren't.
Henry at the Country Club of Louisiana. Henry, good morning. You're on with Eddie Rasponi. Hi, Henry.
Hi, Mr. Jim. Hi, Mr. Eddie. Mr. Jim, I'm going to agree with you. Mr. Eddie's a good man. And I've lived in Baton Rouge all my life, and I know that him and his brothers have done quite a few charitable things that we know about and probably a lot more that nobody will ever know about. So I think he's a good man. And even though I didn't vote for him, I'm one of those, what do you call it? Call us on the commercials, loony liberals. Well, I'm a proud one. But one thing that really got me, when Trump came down and led that campaign rally up in Monroe, and Mr. Jim, you know as well as I do what the facts are, and so do you, Mr. Eddie, said that John Bel Edwards supported abortion and was going to take our guns away. That Mr. Eddie is far better than that level of campaigning. And
All right. Thank you, Henry. What are your thoughts about how the president mischaracterized some of the positions that the governor had?
Yeah, I don't even recall that he said that. I really didn't. Obviously, John Bell is pro-life, and that's a good thing. That's his faith, and I totally agree with him. I'm the same way. And obviously, I don't think he wants to take our guns away. He's like us. He's a sportsman as well, so... I don't know where the president came up with those things.
Well, the governor stated off the air before his last governor's show that he had run into the president in one of those nice suites. You were in the stands, and the governor was in the suite not far from the president. And he said the president ran up to him and said something to the effect that you're the best governor in America. And, I mean, the president is capable of some hyperbole, I think. Somehow I get that impression every now and then.
I don't think that's an impression. But it could be fact. I mean, he really is that way. He's very engaging, and he's a salesman.
But the governor said his son, his 18-year-old son, John Miller, said, isn't that the same guy who said you were in favor of third trimester abortions a few months ago? But in politics, after the election, it's nice if you can heal the wounds, but quite often those are wounds that are open that will never go away. Do you feel bruised in any way about what happened to you?
No, I don't really. I'm just trying to do what God has asked me to do. And I have a very good life. My wife and I have 7 married children and 24 grandchildren. And he continues to bless me, and I'm going to continue to try to serve him.
Well, earlier you said you wouldn't run because of your family. If it were not for the family, if you were a single guy like me, would you say, hey, let's do it again?
That's a long ways off. I would say this. It's a lot to ask of your wife. It's a lot to ask of your children and your grandchildren because you're giving up a lot of time. So we're not going to do this again.
Paul in Opelousas. Paul, you're on the air with Eddie Rasponi. Hi, Paul.
How you doing, Jim? How you doing, Mr. Rasponi? A question and a statement. One, only on WRKF can you hear this, both sides, because we know the governor has a radio show, too. And, you know, this is open Louisiana. That's a great thing. Mr. Rasponi, dealing with your business, I'm in the oil industry too. What new projects are coming up in the state that your business dealing with that just, you know, showing that growth like the stuff in the LNG plants and, in Lake Charles and the new plant that's coming up around Baton Rouge. What's on the table coming up next? Thank you.
You know, I think there's some where we're losing quite a bit of the basic expansions because of the executive order of our governor. So those jobs have dried up, and some of the majors they're building here, but only if they have, you know, if it's absolutely necessary to do so. You do have a major projects coming in St. James, I understand, and you do have some LNG projects coming, but those are the two major expansions that I'm familiar with.
Should our state have an increase in its minimum wage?
You know, minimum wage, I don't think so. I really don't. You have to be careful with minimum wage because what you do, you're going to have more kiosks and McDonald's and gas stations and everything else.
In Arkansas, it's $11 an hour.
Pardon me?
In Arkansas, it's $11 an hour. Why is it different one state over, a poor state like us? Why is it much different there than it is here? $7.25, as you know, is not going to get you very far. I bet of your 3,600 employees, not one of them earns $7.25 an hour. You pay better than that, don't you?
Yes. Minimum wage doesn't come into the picture in our industry at all. We're starting young people out at much, twice that just to get.
Okay. Charlotte in New Iberia. Charlotte, you're on with Eddie Risponi.
Hello, Mr. Risponi. Jim, thanks for taking my call. Mr. Risponi, in one of the news segments that you were on, you said that your family built the house in which you grew up. Did you all put it on pillars or did you all use pilings? And if pilings, how deep?
That's a great question. I'm surprised to hear it, but back then it was on those, you did the little brick piles, underneath it, the little pillars underneath it.
It's still standing.
It's still standing.
And when was it built?
Oh, it was in the early 40s. When my dad moved.
Before you were born. So
yes.
You grew up there.
Right.
And
I had
to
crawl underneath it and take care of pipes and everything
and
else.
Belated happy birthday to you, January 21st for Eddie Risponi. David in Atlanta. Hey, David, we're going to a break, but please get your remarks in and we'll get Eddie Risponi to respond.
Okay. Mr. Risponi, Shake Shack pays $15 an hour and their earnings are just fine. You know, with the endorsement of President Trump, I assume you're a fellow climate change denier. Twice last year, the spillway had to be opened to protect New Orleans. The Corps of Engineers will be spending billions of dollars to reinforce those old levees along the river and raise them. With climate change, every year the Mississippi is getting higher and higher. It could be a matter of time before those levees along the river breach or overtop and destroy New Orleans.
All right. What about we'll keep you for a few more minutes, but quickly before we go to the break, 10 seconds, climate change. Do you think it's real?
I think climate change is real, but what's causing it is where the questions come in.
All right. 877-217-5757. We'll return and spend a few more minutes with Eddie Risponi and then hear from historian Alexis Coe. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And as you can imagine, a lot of people lined up to talk to Eddie Risponi, and we're only going to be able to get to one more call. And then we hopefully, and Eddie Risponi, who I know is a man of his word, he kept his word to come on our show, and he'll be back. So Danielle in Shenandoah, you'll be our final caller for Eddie Risponi, and then we go to the remarkable historian Alexis Coe. Danielle, you're on the air with Eddie Risponi. Good morning.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Mr. Risponi. Good morning, y'all. Just calling is not. I'm not talking politics today. I just wanted to say that I really enjoyed this interview and hearing kind of a different side of a politician. You don't get to hear a lot during the campaign, so it's been nice to hear some of the personal parts of Mr. Risponi's life. And my husband and I did not vote for you, but it's definitely been a nice interview.
Well, thank you, Danielle. We like calls like that.
Well, thank you, Danielle.
And quickly,
a
listener asked off air, and it's a good question, and you'll have to give us the Cliff Notes version, but if you could pick one issue that you think is most important to the future of our state, what is it?
We have to fix the education. That's if you want
you
one
think
issue.
That's more important than erosion?
Well, if you fix education, you don't have.
You can do other things. That's what.
Yeah, everything else takes care of itself.
Well, Eddie Risponi, let's do it again. You're a good man, and I admire anybody who gets in the arena, especially at the age of 70, and you did it, and you almost were elected governor, and as I stated, some people would be in seclusion right now, still not speaking to people, but it hasn't even been 100 days, and you were here with us today and took some pointed calls. I really like that. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.